It's been nearly 6 months since Alan interviewed Warren Ebert, the head of Sentinel Property Group, a commercial property funds management company. Warren talked then about how he was quite bullish on commercial property in Northern Australia and the Northern Territory specifically. Well, we're here in the Northern Territory for a week to see what's happening. Sentinel already owns the biggest shopping centre in the Territory, some student flats, and it also just bought a pub. And pubs are big business in the NT for the obvious reasons of heat and thirst, but also because of pokies. Endeavour Group is one of the companies that has been active in snapping up pubs in Darwin. Darwin is, of course, our closest port to Asia, as we know, and there's been a bit of news lately on mining for rare earths and other critical minerals, as well as the big gas projects and defence plans. Sentinel's also just gone into the modular home market to provide accommodation for workers who they expect will be headed to the Territory for work. So a bit happening in Little Darwin. Population 165,000, far from the bright lights of big cities. Here's Warren Ebert, Chief Executive Officer of Sentinel Property, to tell us a bit more about it.
Warren, thanks so much for seeing us. It's great to see you in Darwin. Maybe we could just get a quick recap of what Sentinel is and does. That would be great.
Thanks, Maria. Great to see you here. Sentinel is a privately owned property syndication business. I started in 2010. First property we bought was on the 15th of January 2010. Since then, we've bought just over $3 billion worth of property. We've sold about $1.2 billion. We've averaged 19.84% internal rate of return over that period of time, and that's after paying monthly distributions. We'll buy anything, anywhere, anytime at a price.
Okay.
So we always look for things that people don't like. Now, that may be by location. At the moment, you know, we're in Darwin because a lot of people don't like investing up north. We have, by Christmas, we'll have $1.6 billion invested north of Mackay. We bought a lot of properties down in Victoria in the relatively early stages of the GFC when no one was buying down there. We then subsequently sold. We bought a lot of properties in Western Australia when the market was down. We then sold. So we're counter-cyclical. There's another great Warren Buffett, and he says you've got to be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. And that's what we do. We look for things. We were buying homemaker centres in 2012, which they now call large format centres, when no one wanted them. We were, up till 5 years ago, we were the fourth largest owner of large format centres in Australia. So counter-cyclical.
So how you have certain funds, right? Is that how we would be able to invest in, you know, this whole other Warren, alternative Warren?
That's correct, Maria. When I first started in 2010, it was a pretty bad time, and I think a lot of people forget how bad the GFC was. When I was raising equity in late 2009, I remember experienced investors saying, if I can get an 8% return on my money and get my money back in 7 years, that's as good as I could hope. You know, there's a lot of people lost significant portions of their wealth. So back then, people wanted to know exactly what they were investing in, so it was closed-end funds. You know, a lot of them invested in open-ended funds in the boom, 2006, 2007, and had lost everything. So they were very focused on, our first property was a BlueScope steel asset at Acacia Ridge. People wanted to know what they're investing in. That's what we did initially. But as a fund manager, that can become difficult because, you know, things can happen with tenants and it can be difficult getting finance, you know, as the lease becomes a bit shorter. So over the last probably 6 years, our main focus has been on open-ended funds, but we have an open-ended industrial, which is self-explanatory, the type of assets. We have an open-ended homemaker fund. We have an open-ended office fund, regional office fund, so people can invest in a particular sector. And last year, we started a fund called NAIF, Northern Australia Investment Fund. Now, the government has a Northern Australia Infrastructure Fund, so don't confuse us with that.
Right.
And we did that so that we could pay a decent yield because, you know, last year, the last couple of years, distributions have been very low, so that fund we started paying 7.25% because the average age of our investors is 64. So ours is really an income fund. So we're for high net worth individuals. We're not for, you know, what people may class as the mum and dad. Minimum investment 100,000. but ours is about paying a monthly distribution.
And what sort of impact are you seeing from this round of interest rate hikes that we have going on right now? Is it becoming a little bit tighter for you to sort of expand into buying the sort of thing that you want to buy?
It's a beautiful time, Maria.
Oh, yeah?
The blood is starting to flow down the streets. I wouldn't say it's gushing at this stage.
Okay.
We have seen yields on particularly industrial properties blow out significantly, and I won't name parties, but a very, very high-quality property in Brisbane that 12 months ago is a 15-year lease to an international company. That would have sold at 3.5% yield easily 12 months ago. They now can't get 5%.
Mm.
Now, a lot of those larger funds, you know, they would look on a development margin of 10%. Very few of them would get 20%. And now the blowout in the yields, they would be losing money. So it has already started. You're seeing with a lot of office buildings that come on the market, they don't sell, so they take them off the market. You're seeing large format centres have held up very well. You know, they're big blocks of land, main roads, hard to duplicate. But in some sectors, yeah, the blood's starting to flow.
And are you still as excited about Northern Australia as you were? I think 6 months ago you were telling Alan that it was boomtown.
Yes, I'm probably more excited. It's hard to get more excited, Maria, but hopefully you'll get to speak to a number of people up here. And the things that are happening up here are absolutely mind-blowing. There was a show on Four Corners 2 weeks ago on what is happening with defence up here. Now, that's only a very, very small part of it. Northern Territory, and particularly Darwin, boomed from about 2013 to 2017, or maybe a little bit longer, with INPEX, which was a $43 billion US gas project. Now, that was involved Total out of France and INPEX out of Japan. Now, they were the largest infrastructure projects for both of those countries outside of their homeland. Now, that was one major project. So when that came to an end, Darwin got hit very hard. Now, it's not hard to work out that when it's all about one project and you've got 5,000 people involved in building it, plus the flow-on, and then it's 500 people to operate it. So it took a big hit. Then a lot of people are scared about coming back in. But now the diversity of projects, you know, there are tens and tens of billions of dollars worth of projects, you know, whether it's the Sun Cable, which is to supply 30% of the solar electricity to
Singapore.
You know, a while ago we met with a group 120 kilometres south of Tennant Creek at a place called Whitecliffe Wells. Now they're going to be doing 4,000 hectares of cropping. Now their underground water supply is 300 times the capacity of Sydney Harbour. Four times the Three Gorges Dam in China. Now, that went out to an expression of interest from the government. They're only taking 50% of the water that's replaced every year. Yeah, that will employ 150 permanents, 1,500 casuals. The lithium mine that started exporting a couple months ago. It just goes on and on. So not only is it big numbers, but it is very, very widespread, the investment.
Why is it different? I mean, Darwin has that reputation of being boom and bust. Because of, you know, these infrastructure, I mean, you just mentioned it, that there was the huge boom with the INPEX. Mm. Why is that different now?
The diversity, where before it has been on one major project, but now, yeah, there's a lot of things that have happened in the world which Northern Territory is very important for the rest of the world. You know, you see what's happening with Russia, Ukraine. The problems that people have getting gas supply. Now, if you're a person in Europe and you're wanting a long-term gas supply, there's not a lot of options. You can either get it out of the Middle East or you probably get it from Australia. Now, I know we have good relationships with a lot of those Middle East countries, but it was only a year or so ago, I think, Iran, there was threats of closing the Straits of Hormuz, where was it 80% of the oil and gas comes through. Well, if you're in Europe again and you're tied up with that, what happens? So a lot of the products, of the 27 rare earth minerals that are required to build batteries and for, you know, the new electric cars and greening the world, of the 27 rare earth minerals, 21 of them are mined in the Northern Territory.
Mm.
So Northern Territory is not just about what does Australia need, but it for the world. Now, it was only a few weeks ago that President Biden signed off on an executive order that any rare earth minerals going into the United States, there'll be no restrictions, no customs. Yeah, at the moment, I think 95% of the rare earth minerals in the world come from China. Most people would say that's not an ideal scenario. So what's being produced out of the Northern Territory is critical for the rest of the world, and then you get into the defence. Prime Minister Albanese went to the NATO conference about 2 months ago, NATO actually said they want a bigger presence in Asia Pacific. Well, if you're going to have a base in the Asia Pacific, have a look at the map of the world. What country would you be in? Every September there is a big Air Force, I don't know what it's called here, but I remember seeing the headlines in the Fin Review online one night, and it had Luftwaffe in Darwin. I thought, what's that about? And I have a look at that.
Terrible headline.
Yeah, but it made me read it. It made me read it. And what it was is it was the first time that the German Air Force had come to Darwin for these annual games. Now, they have whatever it is, and I haven't seen it, but I'm coming up next year, but there's 21 Air Forces from around the world. So you've now got the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe, coming to Darwin every year. Why are they doing that? So there is so much activity up here. It is just, until you get up here, Marie, you just can't believe it.
Must be some old-timers in Darwin who are terrified seeing that headline, I think.
Yes, but it gets the eye.
Yeah. So what are you doing? You've just bought the Casuarina, am I pronouncing it properly?
Casuarina
mm-hmm. Shopping Centre. You bought that last year?
We bought that the 31st of March this year.
Okay. And I believe that was the biggest transaction in the Northern Territory?
Was the biggest single shopping centre transaction in Australia for over a decade.
Okay. So what's the investment case behind that?
It's irreplaceable. Every man, woman and child in Darwin goes to that shopping centre 5.1 times a month. If you're a retailer and you want to come to Northern Territory, Casuarina Square is where you go. It just dominates. It dominates
the retail sector.
And you cannot build a competitor. Right. If you're going to build a shopping centre to really compete with it, we've got over 200 tenants, you'd have to have 100, 150 tenants. I used to travel to a lot through Asia. I've been to 101 countries. And when I'd go to Asia, I'd think, well, why are they always in these damn shopping centres? And then when you start doing your due diligence in Northern Australia, when it's 36 degrees and 90% humidity, I can tell you don't go swimming unless you really don't like your kids, because you've got the crocodiles and the sharks. And it is just too hot. So they go into a shopping centre. And if you go to Casuarina Square 8:30 on a Saturday morning, you'll be flat out getting a car park. So you have to have a big shopping centre if you're going to spend all day. You just can't build competition. Now, eventually it will be a town centre. We've just bought the sporting club beside, which is almost a hectare. Back in 2016, we bought Cascom, which is an office complex right beside, and 2 hectares. So we have 15 hectares there. It will be, at the moment, we're getting ready to lodge a development application. There's already 300 uni-lodge student accommodation there. We're going to put another 100 there. Okay. It's running at 100%. We're putting a hotel. It's a 50-year project.
So just on the sporting club, that's a pub that adjoins. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about pubs, because I find that a really interesting space. I guess the attraction of buying a pub in a place where the average temperature is above 30 is clear, but there's actually more to it, isn't there? Because the pokies and the gaming element makes it really profitable. Is that right? Is that the case?
Well, it certainly does, but we don't operate the hotel, so we're just a landlord.
Okay.
So to us, it really doesn't make a difference whether it's a Commonwealth Bank or a hotel. We just get the rental income in this particular case.
All right.
We bought that to expand our land holding in Casuarina, but we about 3 weeks ago, we did actually buy a hotel at Moranbah, which is about 3 hours inland from Mackay. And it's interesting with that, we got 40 poker machines. Now, the last sale of poker machines in Queensland was $193,000 each. Now, we paid $8.3 million for the hotel. So the poker machine's actually worth as much as we paid for the whole. But we then sold the lease to someone else, and that's a separate. Yeah, but that's where, and I've got to say, I'm not a poker machine person. I think that they are the scourge of the earth. But they are legal. People like to buy lotto. It's not up to me to tell people what they can do and can't do. But I do have to say that I think they do cause some problems.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's not an ESG investment, but certainly you can't overlook the fact, I mean, the market in New South Wales has attracted investors, the pub market, because gaming and poker machines boost sales and profit. And that's missing in states like Western Australia, I understand. So where gaming's restricted casinos. Do you think the pubs market in the Northern Territory could imitate the market in New South Wales where it's the thing to buy?
One of the things that you see in a changing market, Maria, is when you get rising interest rates or other pressure on investors is they retreat to home. You know, and in Australia, the home of the money is really Sydney or Melbourne.
Right.
So with rising interest rates and just general nervousness for other issues, the big money's not coming up here. So while people would buy a hotel if it's a 20-year lease to Woolworths or Coles, you know, the AVC, yes, they would. But you only have – hotels up here can only have 20 poker machines. Clubs can have 40. Now, in Queensland, I think hotels can have 43 poker machines. I think clubs can have up to 283. So up here, gaming wouldn't form as big a part of your income. So that certainly would have a...
It's a small market.
Yeah,
right.
Smaller market.
I think that's Darwin's problem, isn't it, that everything about it is small.
There's only 140,000 people, Maria, in Darwin. So... you know, the Gold Coast is about 400,000 people, and I think that's part of the reason that the government is investing. You know, there was in World War II, a lot of people forget there was a Brisbane line. Yeah, you know, the decision had been made: we'll defend everything below that, above that, the Yellow Peril can have it. they didn't get it, but I think part of what is happening now up north that it is a populate or perish. Yeah, there is so much land up here and so much resources that if we really don't start to use it, other people may want it. Now, well, of course they want it. They may do something. Now, I'm not trying to scaremonger people, but I think when we have so much land up here and so much resources, it really is a bit silly not to use it, particularly when you get to Sydney and Melbourne, the traffic and the overpopulation.
I think there's definitely an element there that Darwin is far more appreciated to the north than it is to the south or the east of Australia. Yeah, definitely. I think it's been overlooked by
Maria, a little while ago, about 6 weeks ago, we brought 50 of our investors up who were in Casuarina Square, and part of that was to show them what Darwin has to offer. I think most people in Australia have never been to Darwin, and of the people who have, a lot of them haven't been here over recent years. A lot of them say, oh, it's too small, there's nothing there. So we got our investors up, who are all high net worth individuals. They have to be, you know, under ASIC requirements to invest with us. And they were surprised at the quality of restaurants and what really is here. So it's important for us to get those people up, and then they can spread the word.
Do you think Darwin's anything like the Brisbane of the 80s and 90s, say, when you had retiring Victorians moving to the beachside and cheap apartments? I mean, okay, Darwin has a problem with beaches because you can't swim in them. But does it have any of that attraction, or is it a completely different dynamic, do you think?
You might have noticed, Maria, but it can get hot up here.
Yes.
For a long time. I think in spite of what those Melburnians may say, we don't get as many days above 35 degrees in Brisbane as they do in Melbourne. So you can come and live in Brisbane, and most of the year it is very, very nice. In Darwin, most of the year, it's very, very hot. In wintertime, it's, you know, 30, 32 degrees. You do get a cool breeze, and it's quite pleasant. And we were up here during COVID times, and you saw a lot of southerners, when there's a bit of a break, they'd come up here and just stay. So it's absolutely magnificent during winter. In summertime, it is very, very hot. Hence, they all go to our shopping centre, which is great. But it's... No, I don't think you'll see the retirees coming up here. They may come up in winter. One of my early trips up here, I did say to one of the to Andy Cowan, who's the Investment Commissioner of the Northern Territory Government, I said, well, you know, how will you get people to move up here when it's so hot? And most of us, including me, we judge it upon the climate that we have in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. He said, well, you have to remember that there's 500 million people in Asia who live in the same climate. you know, when you go to Singapore, I've come out of that airport sometimes, and when that door opens and that air hits you, it's like an oven door opening. You think, gee, can we get in the cab and let's get going?
Blast furnace.
In Singapore, the only difference between summer and winter is whether it's wet or dry. So Darwin actually has a better temperature than a lot of those Asian countries. So you will see, and Darwin is in Asia. You know, it's less than 2 hours to Indonesia, and it's 5 hours to Melbourne. So we are going to see, you know, I think about 15% of the population in Darwin are from the Philippines. Yeah. There's a very big Asian population, and they are used to the climate. I think that's what we're going to see. A lot of Asian people come here.
It's interesting you mentioned Singapore. I agree with you. Do you think that this thing where Darwin is like Singapore, where retail is all about providing a great air-conditioned experience rather than online shopping, is so that, you know, retail is actually still about the physical thing of shopping rather than online? Do you think that's still the case?
Maria, what we've seen, some years ago, online started, and a lot of people said it was the end of bricks and mortar retail.
Yep.
But it was the end of bad bricks and mortar retailers.
Right.
And when we had the lockdown, online absolutely boomed, and people said, that's it, bricks and mortar is dead. But when you're locked up in your apartment in Melbourne and you can't go out, well, you will shop online. You don't have much of a choice. But what we've seen since it's opened up, a lot of people who tried online, and I'm one of them, won't do it anymore, because the shirts turn up, they're the wrong size, the shoes are the wrong size, they're the wrong colour. And also a lot of people, particularly the younger people and girls, it's socialising. They go out with their friends and they'll try on the dress, have a bit of a talk and they have a coffee. So the turnover in dollars in bricks and mortar has improved, is growing at twice the rate now that online is. Actually in America, Amazon closed down their first last mile depot warehouse in the Bronx. Federal Express have closed 9 of their warehouses. They thought the way it was booming in COVID, it was going to keep going, and it hasn't. It has been reset. And so when you see Amazon actually have bricks and mortar stores, it shows you that online isn't the be all and end all. Yeah. It's an important part. I know myself, I have a farm not far from Brisbane City, and of a weekend, if I want to buy something at Bunnings or Super Cheap, I'll get online and see what they have, and then I'll go and buy it. So it's, you've got to have bricks and clicks.
I'm wondering if you have anything to say about the people turning up for the David Jones sale. It's quite a traditional retailer.
Yeah, we don't own, we're actually buying a shopping centre in Mackay that has Myer in it, and we have seen turnover up 18% this year, but off a very low base. They lost their way, you know, and there's a lot of, as I said earlier, that retailing isn't finished, bad retailers are finished. And you've got to keep reinventing yourself. Yeah, and the number of specialty stores, you know, years ago, Myers and David Jones had everything. And I saw in the Courier Mail, which is a Brisbane newspaper, a week ago, it asked, you know, do you shop at at Myer or David Jones? I think it was 93% of people said yes. But they didn't ask them how often.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people will go there for the Boxing Day sales. Or the sales, that is not their main shop, and that's a question that they didn't ask. So, you've got so many other specialty retailers that sell everything that that Myer and David Jones sell. I think it's very hard for them to come back.
Right. What do you think about, I mean, you've bought some accommodation for students. I'm just wondering what the thinking is behind that, and whether it has anything to do with the fact that Darwin has the youngest population in Australia of a capital city.
Maria, the student accommodation that we have is part of Casuarina Square.
Right.
So that's how we got it. But since then, we've been doing a bit more work. And even during COVID, it was running at 92, 94% in Darwin. So I don't know.
Tenancy.
What. Yes, right. So occupancy.
Occupancy.
It's now at 100%. And now we have met with the Charles Darwin University, and I hope they don't mind me saying, but their intention over the next few years is to go from 2,000 overseas students to 8,000.
Okay.
Now that is going to, so there's another increase of 6,000 students. Let's say that's at least 4,000 residents. Now they have to live somewhere. Now they do tend to live in smaller accommodation. I suppose maybe they like to spend their money on drinks and other stuff rather than accommodation, but there is an urgent need. So that will continue to grow. And we're seeing in, won't name the universities in Queensland, but there's a university on the Gold Coast, and they can't take any more students at the moment because they do not have any accommodation for them.
Mm.
So it is continuing to grow. I see in they haven't come back as strong in Melbourne, and I think that maybe in Melbourne it was because of where they came from, that has been a bit slower to recover, and you know, they still have their own COVID problem. But certainly in Queensland, Northern Territory, it's come back very, very strong.
What sort of problems are you seeing in terms of like developing these assets that you have? I mean, is there a labour shortage here that's really affecting the construction sector, as it is in other places around Australia?
It's worse in the Northern Territory.
Why is that?
Well, I think once again, if you've got to work on a roof, Marie, you'd probably rather work on a roof that's 25 degrees rather than 50 degrees.
I don't know. Melbourne and Sydney look pretty wet these days. I don't think I would get up on a roof at the moment.
Yeah, probably some of those unionised workers still get paid, but that's another interview. So it is, we're seeing in we're from Brisbane, and we see there that you just cannot get tradespeople. And the other thing that we have is the finishing trades. You know, while the concreters and formworkers, that may be easing off because there's a lot of projects that aren't happening because of the cost of funding and, you know, construction price are up 40% plus. But in all of these flooded areas, you know, the finishing trades you'll see people, the house has been destroyed, so you've got to pull up your carpet, you've got to rip the plaster off the walls. Yeah, the frame will stand there. So there's going to be work for years and years of people redoing the wiring, redoing the plumbing, redoing the painting. So this shortage of labour is only going to get worse because we've still got places flooded down south. So people can't get in there and work. So it is, the situation's terrible, and it's going to get worse. So and in Darwin, it's worse.
Yeah, more worse. Yeah. Where else in Australia are you finding it interesting to invest?
I think if you run a line from Gladstone across, so north of Gladstone, although we don't own anything in Gladstone because it's only 23,000 people, and those areas are harder to sell. So even though we're not selling all the time, when you get a valuation done on your property, that affects the valuation if there isn't a lot of buyers. So we're really Mackay North, and I think if you have a look at where the wealth for Australia is being created, Marie, you'll find it's Mackay North. You know, and I know as disgraceful as coal is, the Queensland exports this year are $79 billion. We could not survive without it. But then in addition to that, you've got, you know, the mineral province around Mount Isa got $360 billion. Now, that was last year before the prices went through the roof. I think Northern Australia, that's where the growth for Australia is, and we don't have the competition. You have plenty of people are prepared to buy in Sydney and Melbourne. Back in the old days, there used to be a saying, you don't get sacked for buying IBM. If you bought the best, you know, the biggest computer company in the world, if it went wrong, it wasn't your fault. I think a lot of investors, particularly overseas investors, if they buy in Sydney or Melbourne and something goes wrong, well, it's not our fault, they're the main markets. We're, as I said earlier, we're an income fund. We're looking at the high yield, the high distribution. So to get that, you've got to go to the areas where other people don't want to be. We're very long in Mackay. Townsville is just absolutely booming.
What's booming in Townsville? Is it industrial property?
Absolutely everything. Well, you know, it's the largest defence base in Australia.
Okay.
Now, one particular property that we have there, that does some work on vehicles for the army. Now, as of earlier this year, all the parts they use have to be made in Australia. Now, that was never an issue before. So one thing that COVID has done is made people reassess, well, if we're going to have some disputes with people, should we really be getting our spare parts and things from there? So, and then once again, the minerals province. You know, all these things. General Motors was in the Townsville Bulletin a few weeks ago. They're putting $169 million into a cobalt and nickel refinery at Lansdowne Industrial Estate, which is 40 kilometres inland from Townsville. And then they'll start making batteries. So you've got all these sorts of things that people just don't even think of. And they're coming from, you know, Northern Australia, Northern Queensland, Northern... They're not coming out of Sydney and Melbourne And while these times are a bit difficult and everyone bunkers down in Sydney or Melbourne, it's a wonderful time for us up north.
And just before we finish, I'm looking at your business card and it's got NASS on it. Can you tell us what that is?
I thought you never asked, Moran.
Okay.
it's a company we started a few months ago called Northern Australia Accommodation Solutions. So you were asking earlier about the employment issues up here. And it is pretty bad. And there was on the nightly news, Channel 7, a month or more ago, and it had growth rates in Australia. I think it had Northern Territory at the slowest growth rate. And the reason is there's no accommodation. Mm. You can't get quality people to come up here if you don't have accommodation. Now, I spoke to one of the larger builders and I said, what are you doing about what about modular? Oh, no, you can't do that. What is the definition of stupidity when you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you expect a different result? We spoke about the shortage of labour, the shortage of materials. The government are talking about the Northern Territory economy going from $26 billion in 2020 to $40 billion in 2030. And that's 35,000 new jobs. Well, the multiplier effect is normally 3 to 5. Maria, you come up, your partner comes up, your children come up. 35,000 jobs is 150,000 people. Now, the ABS at the moment says there's 2.1 persons per household in Australia. So that's 70,000 houses. 70,000 houses over the next 7 years. That's 10,000 a year. Now, they have a terrible wet season here, so you've got to have 2 to 4 months off, but let's say it's only two. So you have to deliver 10,000 houses a year, and you have 10 months to do it in. That's 1,000 homes a month, 20 working days a month, 50 homes every working day for the next 7 years. And if you don't do 50 today, it's 100 tomorrow.
So are you building these homes or just what are you doing?
We're bringing in modular from overseas.
Okay.
Now, last week we had some senior people from the Northern Territory government in Asia looking at the factory. And when you talk about modular, most people think about dongas. This accommodation is so far from that. They have a 50-year structural warranty. They're designed to meet up to 8 on the Richter scale.
Cyclones?
Cyclone, that's nothing. These buildings laugh at cyclones.
Right.
if you saw what happened in Indonesia with the earthquake a few days ago, that was only 5.6 on the Richter scale. These buildings are designed for 8 on the Richter scale.
Right. Where are they coming from?
Vietnam.
Okay.
Now, we've been over the factory twice. One of the great things, all the senior management are Australian, so we're not having to convince or explain to them what our requirements are. They're already doing a lot of work for the New Zealand government. They've built hotels in Christchurch, and Christchurch was demolished from an earthquake maybe a decade ago. 6 years ago, they finished an 8-level hotel there. It has since sold twice, increased price each time. This is quality that you have never seen. So we will bring these over and we'll truck them down to whether it's Katherine or wherever it is. And you will have tradespeople on site for a week rather than 6 months.
Are you selling these homes or are you renting them out, leasing them out?
A lot of this we'll do for the government. Our main business is in syndication, property syndicates. But I said earlier with Casuarina Square, we get every man, woman and child comes to our shopping centre 5.1 times a month and spends $45. So if we get another 70,000 people living in Darwin, assuming 50% of the population growth, and they come 5.1 times a month and spend $45, that'll be pretty nice for our shopping centre, Maria.
Okay.
But Northern Territory needs it. There is so much opportunity, and as you would know, investment is mobile. If the government can't accommodate those investments, and regularly, and we had our Prime Minister at the Jobs Summit, the way to solve that is increase immigration from 160,000 to 195,000.
Well,
there's no accommodation.
I understand that accommodation is not just a problem in the Northern Territory, but also in the rest of the country, especially in rural areas, because, they have nowhere to put them.
Modular in Australia typically is not cheaper. And there has been some done down south that hasn't worked out well, so people once bitten, twice shy. So
yeah.
We've been very selective at what we've looked at. So I've looked at factories in Brisbane, and it is certainly not cheaper. It is convenient. If a schoolroom gets burnt down on a Thursday, they can have it operating on Monday. And if you're going to, as you're talking about, Maria, the regional areas, you can put them on a truck, take them out there. you know, the problem of getting tradespeople to regional areas, you know, we just discussed earlier how hard it is getting them to Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Darwin. Well, you try to get them a few thousand kilometres. So that's where modular comes into its own. The benefit with Darwin being in Asia, we have a price benefit that no other city has.
What is that?
Well, it's about 20%. But with the modular, we're not really doing it for the cost saving, even though there is a cost saving. There is just no other way that you can produce 10 houses a day or whatever you want to do. We just don't have the people. We don't have the materials. You bring this over and you can get – because most of the work's done now. There's still work to do in Australia. We've still got to put the foundations in and we've got to run the electricity. So it's not as if there isn't any work. But the last things that unions should be worried about at the moment is, am I going to lose my job?
Mm.
Yeah, there's too many jobs in Australia now. So we're doing it a different way. So we've had the government over there last week, and this is quality that people just won't believe until they see it.
Okay, great. Warren, thanks so much for being with us today. Really interesting.
Absolute pleasure, Maria. Thank you.
So that was Warren Ebbett, Chief Executive Officer of Sentinel Property Group.